Drunk.ie Podcast.
Education and information.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Drugs.ie podcast. This episode focuses on recent research findings into the effectiveness of court-appointed drug education in Ireland. The research was commissioned by the Drug and Alcohol Awareness Programme and was conducted by Fran Giaquinto in 2007 and was funded by the AIB Better Ireland Programme. The podcast features an interview with Mary Scally, coordinator of the Drug and Alcohol Awareness Programme Addiction Studies. Mary offers an insight into the background of the research and the need for research in this area. We then hear a live recording featuring retired Justice Gillian Hussey, who officially launched the research report in the Kilmainham Hilton Hotel on Friday 29th of February 2008. You can download the full research report on the drugs.ie website. Okay, hello Mary, and thanks a lot for taking time to come and talk about this report. Can you give us a little background information regarding this research, how it came about and why there was a need for research in this area?
I think we in the Crosscare Drug and Alcohol Programme had, over the years, had a couple of people coming to our through our counselling service for drug education from the courts. But we had a summer in 2006 when we had a large group of people, of about 20 people who came specifically associated with rock concerts and were looking for drug education that they were required to do. And we kind of started asking questions of ourselves, like, why are we doing this? And are we the right people for doing it? Because we felt that we were kind of out of the loop, and that was the question we were asking ourselves.
And, okay, well, my understanding of... you know, one of the scenarios that this research has highlighted is that of a young person, say, who is arrested for smoking a joint at one of the festivals. They are then subsequently brought in front of a special sitting of a court, you know, that has been set up specifically to deal with large numbers of people caught for minor drug offences at festivals. So then what would happen in that case is the group are collectively fined and then told to attend a drug education course. And for you, the DAP, herein lies a problem.
Yes.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit around that then?
That, and even though the idea behind it is quite admirable, that the young person would actually get would do some education to help them reflect on the drug usage. And so we're not saying that that's a bad idea. What we felt was a bad idea, and what the research was indicating, was that when they were coming to us, which was generally about 6 months to a year after the event, they had kind of, they were far removed from the whole incident in the first place, and were only really interested in doing the drug education to get it out of the way so that they wouldn't get into any further trouble within the criminal justice system. So it was, education wasn't meeting anybody's needs. It wasn't meeting the young person's needs, the court systems, and it wasn't good practice for us to be sitting down with people who were not really listening or interested in being there. So that was it. Yeah.
So you're saying that they really, it's like a requirement of, like, you know, in school, you know, do your homework or, you know, you're in trouble. So they weren't actually interested in the education.
No, not at all. And, so the question then was, how do you do this better? And so we started exploring maybe something, some other systems. And the system we came across through the research was the arrest referral system in the UK, which is where, at the point of arrest, that somebody would receive drug education or a brief intervention around their drug use, which diverts people from maybe more serious issues down the road. So we were kind of saying that's probably a more effective approach than 6 months down the road trying to catch up with the experience.
Right, so like dealing with the scenario in the here and now as such.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. And that, like, that system does exist in the UK at the moment then?
It does, and there, it has been piloted here in the North Inner City, particularly associated with the drug court, but that there were project workers put in place to meet people who were involved in the criminal justice system, and that there were interventions. So we know it's been tried out, and there are other areas of the country that people are considering arrest referral, but it's been running in the UK for 20 years, and it's quite effective, and it's been measured.
It has been, that has been evaluated as as a service then.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's both, it's two different processes. One is that you meet somebody and you just talk about their drug use, and it's an information giving process, or with somebody who's trained to do a kind of a, some sort of an assessment with somebody and might refer them into treatment if they need. So it's a real, it's a critical moment in somebody's drug use, being arrested.
Yeah.
And so then we're kind of saying maybe to use that as an opportunity to not condone what they're doing necessarily, but to actually say, well, we don't want to put everybody automatically into prison, so let's think about what else we can do and support these people to change their behaviour.
Okay, so the logic behind that then, really what you're saying is, I mean, if we, I suppose, compare it to the system that we have at the moment, you know, with the drug-appointed education via the court system, you receive that education 6 months down the road.
Mm.
The majority of people, do you think, that would be prosecuted for these minor offences, is there any evidence to suggest that they don't go down the road of problematic drug use, or are there any thoughts around that?
Well, everyone who has... most people who arrive in our prison systems have had a first offence.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a level where there are things that can happen early on in somebody's drug use that can maybe not necessarily mean that they're not going to be using illegal drugs down the road, but you might be able to influence their behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
So the severity of that drug use mightn't be so significant. So there's that kind of, it is kind of a reduction of harm, but also it's effective in the UK at diverting people from crime as well, these brief interventions. So definitely there's evidence that arrest referral interventions can divert a significant group of people, but you're never going to divert everybody. And people, but being arrested is a sign of your drug use becoming problematic.
Mm.
It's one of the indications. So at that point, in the same way as waking up in A&E, having maybe overused a substance, is an opportunity. And we've investigated how you might put services into the casualty unit. So, and we're just saying that the other possibility is in the point of arrest.
So I suppose, exactly, this is what this particular system that we have at the moment highlights, is ineffectiveness to deal with, a scenario that has the potential to become problematic, because you're offering the intervention or education 6 months, whatever it is, down the road, whereas you're not really dealing with the scenario in the here and now, and you can't really make that call then, you know, at that particular time.
Absolutely, yeah. We're just saying that if you move it back into the process, it's probably more effective. That's simply what we're saying. I don't think it is ever a waste of time for people to do drug education.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
It's always beneficial, but it definitely would be more effective if the person is living an experience at that point in time, you know.
Yeah.
But then it's just to be more effective than when you bring in that opportunity for people.
The report itself generated a lot of media interest. Did the level of interest in it surprise you?
It did, yeah, because I think people thought we were saying something that we weren't. We're not criticising the criminal justice system in any way, and we're not saying in any way that people shouldn't be prosecuted for committing illegal offences. But what we're saying is to you, as I've said a couple of times now, to use that opportunity in a more imaginative way for the people, because the people who are arrested are our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers, our sons and daughters. So let's think about what we can do to help them in that moment.
Okay. The things we have to emphasise again is this is actually an independent piece of research.
Yes.
And that it was commissioned by the GAP. It wasn't actually conducted by them themselves. But
you
have issued a position paper in relation to the research findings. Can you give us a brief overview of this in relation to any changes this research has made in relation to your own service?
Yeah, first and foremost, the research names, because the research is done from the perspective of the voluntary sector, which ourselves and CAD, CYC and ARUS and FROIGA were the agencies who were involved in the research, led by DAP. So the research suggested if a voluntary agency wanted to contribute to this process, that they would need to work in collaboration, in partnership with the probation service, and that it's a process of actually negotiating that out. Which one of the problems we had was that we were outside of all the systems. So that's the big, if we're going to work on this long term, we need to have a relationship with probation. The second thing is that there are actually, as a voluntary agency involved in this kind of work, that you would actually measure. You'd be able to measure, like the question you asked, do we know that this diverts people? We have indications from the UK, but we have no research done in Ireland. So we need to set down a kind of measure levels that you can actually measure your effectiveness, and there's suggestions around that. And also, it for us as DAP, it kind of named that we're not necessarily the right agency for doing that. It's probably more appropriate for an agency that's has a very clear geographical remit in a particular area that would be able to work with people long term, whereas we work with Dublin Diocese and we cover a vast territory, and it's probably more effective for us to be referring people to community projects rather than taking on that role. So again, that the individuals are linked in and not work, and that the work doesn't happen in isolation. So.
Okay. Thanks a lot for talking to us about it. We're now going to hear from retired Justice Gillian Hussey speaking at the launch of the report.
So I will invite Gillian to launch the report, please.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. What Chris hasn't told you is that I'm deputising for two ministers. I'm very happy to be here. I have a long association with CrossCare, as Chris has said, but frankly I would have preferred if one of the ministers, either the Minister for Justice or the Drugs Minister, was here, frankly. Because, you see, I'm the converted. I'm on the same side as the lot of you. And I sing out of the same hymn book as the author of this excellent work. I have really enjoyed reading it. I congratulate CrossCare and Chris and Mary, and Chris, whom I've known for more years than either of us will ever admit. It's a very interesting study, and one that is well worth studying and implementing. Like most women of my generation, coming from an ordinary middle-class background, crime was something well outside my sights. When I was appointed to the district court in the middle of the last century, 1984, I assumed that I would never, never sit in a criminal court, because women didn't do crime at that stage. My first criminal court was after 5 months on the bench. It was in the Bridewell. And I was terrified for several weeks. I didn't know whether I was coming or going. I knew nothing about drugs, anything. I didn't even know who was criminal and who wasn't, so to speak. But I learned quite a lot. And since that, drugs really took over my life. I can say now, I couldn't say it for years, but I think I'm the only judge that ever went on a drug search. I went out with a drug squad one night, many, many years ago, well, in the mid-80s. And I have to say, I'd love to make it compulsory for every judge to do the same. Because it was an absolute eye-opener. I discovered, I mean, I was very innocent at the time, I have to say, but I discovered afterwards that one of the people that was arrested that night in the flat turned out to be a criminal who was shot in a bank raid many, many years after. Big, big criminal, but I didn't know it at the time, and I was very young, well, much younger, and not very young, but much younger, and innocent, and I was to learn. Drugs are still some. I'm retired nearly 6 years now, and I still feel as passionate today as I did when I really got totally immersed in the drug scene many, many years ago. And I'm involved at the moment, on the periphery admittedly, of two residential rehab establishments here in Ireland. As I say, I've read this document with great interest and empathy. And I take the opportunity, and I'm sorry I didn't meet Fran, and please convey my congratulations to her, because her findings are absolutely spot on. I couldn't have written it myself, but I'd love to have been able to write it, because it really is, it's excellent. In that research, I have to say, it's interesting but not surprising that she spoke with my former colleague, Judge James Paul MacDonald. It's interesting for several reasons. Firstly, you have an excellent probation and welfare service in Tallaght. It's an excellent team. You also have the restorative justice, the victim offender mediation service, which Peter Keeley, whom I worked with there and in a previous life up in Ballyfermot. I presume everybody here is in the same boat. You seem to work around. There's a little network of people and you go from one place to the other. And I knew Peter for many, many years and still know Peter. But this, it wasn't called the Victim Offenders Mediation Service. I can't remember exactly what it was called first. It was a pilot scheme. Excellent. And it was it's funded and still is funded, I think, by the Probation Service. Now, as far as I'm aware, in the Dublin metropolitan area, Judge MacDonald is one of very, very few judges sitting in the same court for any length of time. And I sat in Kilmainham for 16 years. I have to say, I went there in disgrace for a week, signed there for a week, because there was a problem up there, and I was to fill the gap for a week. But I won't tell you the reason for that. However, it sorts itself out. And I'm very happy to say that I stayed there for 16 very happy years. Tough, but happy. Myself and the late Judge Sean Dunlap, who sat in Rathfarnham, which then moved to Tallaght when the lovely courthouse was in Tallaght was built, were two of three district judges in the Dublin metropolitan area who sat in the same court for any number of years. The third was out in Dunleary. Now, Judge MacDonald has succeeded the late John Dunlap. I'm telling you this because I think it helps illustrate the difficulty in voluntary organisations in Dublin having a rapport with a district judge who is not constantly in the same court for any length of time. The president of the district court organises the sittings. Some judges do not like sitting in a criminal court or indeed in the same court for any length of time. And that is where the whole nub of, and it's only the Dublin area. I felt that much to the criminals' disgust, that my being in the same court all the time, I got to know them, or they got to know me too. And I mention this as it explains how much easier it is for the judges in districts around the country to have a rapport with voluntary organisations. Now, I actually had a great rapport with a network in Dublin 8 and Dublin 10, Ballyfermot. And I would depend, if somebody rang me up or sent me a note from a certain organisation, right, spot on. If I got something from somewhere I didn't know, I'd either, you know, investigate or ignore it. And sometimes I'd have to ignore it. But it shows you how you can have a rapport. But I think it's coming from that research, it's important to say that about the Dublin area. It's only the Dublin area, I think. And yes, Cavan, for instance, was one of the areas that was mentioned, and that had a great link. But there's no reason why all the other areas wouldn't have a rapport with the judge. I could talk about drugs for hours, but I promise I won't. I'm sure that the Probation and Welfare Service, which is a statutory body attached to the court, as Mary has said, and through whom the judge normally works, they'd be delighted to have more organisations to relieve them of some of their burdens and give them more time to address more difficult situations. It stands to reason. They're overworked. And to have some organisation that would be able to take on board these minor offences and intervention, I think would be wonderful. And it should certainly be sought after. I'm very interested in the Dependency to Work, the D2W initiative, which is a multi-agency scheme. This is mentioned in the research. And it's apparently being rolled out in England. It provides, as Fran has said, a single holistic assessment of need for young adults whose offending is related to drugs, alcohol, and or mental health. She said and, I say and or mental health. Followed by individualized multi-agency intervention that coordinates a range of services. My goodness me, could we have them? Oh, how I would have loved them. I still would love them. Fran's research goes on to say, and I quote, "The key to success is that services are delivered simultaneously," and Mary has suggested not after 6 months, "and clients are given real initiatives to change their behaviour, and this is based on the premise that it is unrealistic to expect someone to deal with their addiction without giving them an alternative activity to fill their time." I couldn't have put it as well, and it's absolutely says it all. This is why I feel that it is one of the ministers who should be here instead of me. It's important for them to hear this. It's also important for them to act upon it. And it's the acting upon it that I would beseech. Because I see this as a very progressive step. Unfortunately, it's a step that could have been taken at least 20 years ago. But better late than never. A system where young people could be helped to avoid a criminal record, although they have been arrested for a minor offence, is a very humane and good thing. The way I look at it is, it could be one of your family or mine. And with a little bit of kindly intervention, they could be steered away from the criminal system and enjoy a normal and fruitful life without a criminal record. If they are given this opportunity and they don't avail of it, then so be it. They will end up in court, in the criminal justice system, and then in the University of Crime, in prison. But they have at least been given that choice. I will end by telling you about a day I had in court one April many, many years ago. About 3 weeks before this day, a young man of 17, charged with possession of a small bit of cannabis resin, appeared one afternoon in court. He came from a very good background. And this, I'm going back nearly 20 years now. There were three cars at least sitting outside in the driveway, I'd say, when most people didn't have one car. At least they had one and that was it. So he was attending a post-secondary education establishment. And I asked him, did his parents know he was in the court? No. So I used a yardstick. My own children didn't like it, but I used a yardstick. If that was my son standing in the dock, how would I like that son of mine to be dealt with? And I used that for many, many years. And this was certainly a case of it. Although I didn't have three cars in the driveway. But anyhow, I told him to go home and tell his parents and come back on a certain day. So this certain day arrived. I wasn't totally certain it was the day he was going to be in court, but I had a suspicion he was. And the court was packed this particular morning. And the first case called was a Spanish student. And he was found with a little bit of cannabis resin. He was attending a post-secondary institution. He also lived in a very sought-after neighbourhood. Not the same neighbourhood, but another sought-after neighbourhood. Oh, both on the south side, I must tell you. And anyhow, he had a solicitor and a barrister. Must have cost him a fortune. I make no apologies for that. Anyhow, if it was his first offence for cannabis resin, the law is that he cannot go to prison, it's just a fine. Now, I presume the barrister didn't know that, or if he did, he was playing the same silly games as I was. I played around with this fellow for a while, just like I would if I had been fishing. And eventually, I wanted to make him really feel the heat, in a sense, but I knew what I was going to do with him. So anyhow, in the end, I gave him the benefit of the Probation Act. Now, I have to tell you, by the way, the benefit of the Probation Act is a very mysterious thing. We all think that it means that you haven't a criminal record. If you went many years afterwards to check whether you had a criminal record or not, people with the DPO, Benefit and Probation Act, actually that is on their record. Now, it can be or it can't be. It's a very grey area. But I have come across somebody who asked me, could they appeal a case after something like 25 years? Because this was on their record. I just say that I don't know the answer to it. But later on in that morning, anyhow, this 25-year-old from a very deprived part of the inner city came up. Charge, small piece of cannabis resin. He was 25 years of age, and he had no previous convictions. Now, I couldn't say to him, God, you're bloody marvellous, coming from that area, and no convictions. I'd love to have gone down and put my two arms around him and told him how wonderful he was. So naturally, I gave him the benefit of the probation act. So my good friend from my three-car neighbourhood came up just before lunch. And I said to him, are your parents here? No, he said, they're not. And I said, why not? Well, he said, they told me it was my own business. So I knew I was going to give him the probation act, because with one swipe of my pen, I can ruin anybody's career by fining them. I wasn't going to do this. I think, hopefully, the experience itself had taught him a lesson. But he was the saddest, and I told him he was the saddest of the three of them. You know, either he didn't tell his parents, in which case there's a fear, there's no good relationship with his parents, or else he told me a lie, one or the other. So anyhow, as I say, I gave him the probation act. And it's that story is why I have pleasure in launching this review of the effectiveness of whatever, not the page, of court-appointed drug education from the perspective of the voluntary sector. Thank you very much.
Drugs.ie podcast.
Education and information.
drugs.ie podcast.
Education and information.